Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The post-Fukushima world is a more challenging world for advocates of nuclear power, and a more complicated world for advocates of fighting climate change, who had been coming to a new acceptance of nuclear as part of the solution, at least temporarily. As we discussed here recently, Germany has announced that it will decommission all its nuclear plants, even though the nation gets about a quarter of its power from nukes. That's a reaction to Fukushima. And the Japan story is now full of revelations about early warnings being ignored and regulators being lax. Now the Associated Press is out with a year-long investigation of nuclear power plants in this country, which concludes that radioactive tritium has leaked into water from corroded underground pipes in three-fourths of the nation's plants. In New Jersey, for example, they report tritium has leaked into an aquifer and a discharge canal feeding Barnegat Bay by the Jersey Shore. And they say safety standards have been loosened by Washington for decades as reactors age. That from the AP investigative report. My first guest this hour speaks for the nuclear industry and is familiar to most of you. She is Christine Todd Whitman, former New Jersey governor and head of the EPA under President George W. Bush. These days, she is co-chair of Case Energy Coalition, a nuclear power advocacy group. Separately, she is also co-chair of the Republican Leadership Council, which supports fiscally conservative, socially inclusive candidates. So we'll talk about nuclear power post-Fukushima and ask for Governor Whitman's take on Governor Christie's environmental record and the Republican presidential hopeful. So, Governor Whitman, always nice to speak with you. Welcome back to WNYC.
Always good to talk to you. We're going to cover a lot of subjects here.
We are, and we can do it. But mostly nuclear. For people who haven't followed your career, it's quite a statement to go from administrator of the EPA to a professional advocate for a power source that environmentalists have constant concerns about. So presuming you had lots of choices for your career path after government, tell our listeners, why'd you choose this?
Sure. Well, this is just one part of what I'm doing now. I'm doing a lot of other things as well with the Whitman Strategy Group. But as a governor in New Jersey, we have nuclear power. And I have toured nuclear reactors. I've always been comfortable with them. And from an environmental perspective, the fact that they are the only form of base power that releases no greenhouse gases or other regulated pollutants while they're producing power has made them an attractive thing. Now, clearly, post-Fukushima, we have got to be concerned. I think it's right that people are asking these questions. We need to. But as I've gotten to know the nuclear industry better and better over time, they really are committed to producing safer nuclear energy. And I know the AP stories raised a lot of concerns and questions that people need to go to the NRC Nuclear Regulatory Commission and to the reactor operators themselves to get the answers. But the answers, if you look at most of those statistics that they're talking about, they go back years. They don't take into account the changes that have been made even since 9/11. In September 9/11, there were a lot of improvements made and a lot of looking at how you could enhance security. But certainly, post-Fukushima, there's been a lot more that's gone on. But really, if you look at our, even though the tritium leaks are something about which you've got to be concerned, even the AP says none of them have reached drinking water aquifers, it's still not something you want to see. But they don't mention the amount of money that's gone into improving and trying to stop that from happening. The industry in 2009, which is sort of the last year for which there's information, spent about $6.5 billion to replace reactor heads and vessels and things like that, the things they talk about. So they're talking about real things that have occurred, and we need to be concerned about it and hold the industry to the very highest standard, but they do miss the changes that have taken place over time and the fact that the industry is safer today. When you put all these things together, along with the fact that we're still looking at a 28% increase in electricity demand by 2035, we've got to figure out how do we do that in a way that keeps our nation safe and secure. And to me, nuclear needs to be a part of that. It's not the only answer. We've got to do better on conservation. We need all the other forms of green power. And we are always going to have coal, gas, and oil, but we should become less reliant on some of the power sources that we import from other countries and understand that we need to keep it safe and reliable and affordable.
On the tritium leaks, in fairness, I'll repeat something that you just said, which is that the AP said they did not find evidence that any of this radioactive tritium had gotten into drinking water per se.
It doesn't mean you ignore it, believe me.
Right.
It means you still take it very seriously and go back at how could that have happened,
and
why did it happen.
And they did say, and I want to ask you about the New Jersey example, that radioactive tritium leaked from corroded underground pipes into an aquifer and a discharge canal feeding Barnegat Bay. I've gone swimming at Barnegat Bay. Is that a revelation to you?
It's a revelation that we've had any of it. The question that I still have in the articles, and I wasn't clear on reading them, is to what level, and whether, it's not at a level from what I could see of what they've written, but I don't know enough about it yet, to ensure that it's not at a level that threatens public health. There's no way to say you want more of any of this stuff going anywhere. But when you look at it as whether it poses a health threat, and Lord knows when I was governor, we did everything we could to clean up Barnegat Bay and to clean up our water and did a very good job of it. I wouldn't be happy with hearing that anything comes in that isn't supposed to be there, but we know it's happening all the time. So the concern becomes, is it anything that poses a threat to human health or to the environment? Is it reaching those levels? And if it hasn't, you still want to stop it, but it isn't necessarily something that we need to panic about.
And in terms of you saying the industry is doing stuff about this, in response to the AP report, the U.S. Government Accountability Office issued its own report, and according to the AP, the GAO noted that while the industry has a voluntary initiative to monitor leaks into underground water sources, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has not evaluated how promptly that system detects such leaks. And the GAO says, absent such an assessment, we continue to believe that the NRC has no assurance that the Groundwater Protection Initiative will lead to prompt detection of underground piping system leaks as nuclear power plants age, unquote. Does that show that such a voluntary initiative by the industry is inadequate?
Well, I don't think it shows it's inadequate. It may show that you need to do more. But what they don't mention also, and it's something that we ought to ask the Nuclear Regulatory Commission about, there are independent scientists that are required to be on site at every nuclear reactor every day. And those people have access to everyone, and they can look at everything that is happening, and they should be asking the relevant questions. You also have now the joint leadership of the Fukushima Response Steering Committee. Department of Energy has a Blue Ribbon Commission on America's Nuclear Future. All these things are looking at what more do we need to do to make sure that we can honestly say to people that nuclear energy is safe. Never mind the fact that we look at the history that it has been enormously safe in this country. New questions are being asked, and they should be asked, and we need to take them seriously and dig deeper. But we do need to, I think it's fair to recognize that over its history, you've seen a steady improvement, and you've seen an industry that, in fact, has been delivering power in a way that hasn't caused concerns up till now.
And more broadly, the AP says this is an example of how regulators and industry have weakened safety standards for decades to keep the nation's commercial nuclear reactors operating within the rules as the plants age beyond their original life expectancy. Are we pushing the limits with the aging plants?
Well, I think it's important, again, to note that the initial operating licenses were for 40 years. That wasn't necessarily because they thought the reactors could only go 40 years. That was the length of time that was based on what it would take to amortize the large capital investments, not the anticipated design life of the reactors. So to say that they're pushing it out by allowing them to go beyond 40 years isn't necessarily recognizing what the intent of the original licensing was. And it also, you've got to understand how much they're doing on an ongoing basement in repair and replacement. you're always going to have people that are very concerned about voluntary undertakings. And I've been a strong believer in voluntary is good, but it doesn't work unless you have a strong regulatory infrastructure around it that has a constant oversight with some real penalties if you start to get outside of the parameters of what's acceptable and what's safe and what you should be doing. And so the NRC has had this responsibility. The reactors have been operating very, and I won't say safely, as they have a very good efficiency record. They operate at about over 90% efficiency. They are things that, as I say, have, if you look at the past operating history, we've had Three Mile Island. But since then, anything that has raised to that level of concern, and they have to report it, everything does get reported, and the NRC annually reports to Congress on anything that has been a significant event, safety event. It's interesting that the total number of these abnormal occurrences throughout the industry between 2003 to fiscal 2009 was zero. There was nothing that was reported. The NRC didn't see it. And again, understand they have and they require the utilities that are operating nuclear reactors to have an independent scientist, one or two independent scientists, on site at all times. So, you know, again, it's how you define they're loosening up on the regulations. We don't want that. I mean, we as people here in this country want to ensure that we have the best of the best and the highest safety record, and we have more regulatory scrutiny than in America than any other country in the world. And so that is something that, as you say, you can't guarantee 100% on anything, and we're going to have to improve, I think, as a people and those who care about something like nuclear industry and nuclear energy. But when you consider the fact that it's 20% of our energy today, how we replace that, we can't do that fast, and it's going to cost a lot of money to replace it. What we should be looking at is how do we enhance what we have got, make it better, make sure that we can look people, and people can be looked in the eye and said, this is going to be safe, as safe as is humanly possible to make it.
I think some environmentalists may disagree about whether we have the most stringent regulatory system in the world, but Christine Todd Whitman, my guest on WNYC, former New Jersey governor, head of the EPA under President George W. Bush. These days, among other things, she is co-chair of Case Energy Coalition, a nuclear power advocacy group. And while you're here, Governor, I would like to ask you about those couple of other things.
Sure.
As former EPA administrator and former governor of New Jersey, do you have an opinion of Governor Christie pulling New Jersey out of the northeastern state's cap-and-trade system for carbon emissions?
Well, one thing that I liked when he did that is his statement that he believed that anthropogenic climate change is real.
Anthropogenic meaning man-made, human-contributed.
That humans contribute to what's going on and that he agrees that we need to do something about that. You can argue over whether Reggie in and of itself was making having the kind of impact that you wanted it to have
relative to
reduction.
Right, the cap-and-trade system known as Reggie.
Known as Reggie among the New England states and the northeastern states, whether that was really the way to go or not. But he is certainly saying that he agrees that there's an issue here. People and our activities are having an impact or part of that problem, and we should do something about it. So I'm comfortable with that position. I may not have, I've been supportive of Reggie, but if it hasn't shown over the years it's been in place that it's actually done much, and of course our economy, unfortunately, has slowed down enough that the New Jersey is meeting its goals relative to greenhouse gas emission reductions without anything else. We've slowed down on the economy, and that's helped reduce our emissions.
I guess that's not the way you want to reduce your carbon emissions
and
meet those goals,
but if
that's happening. So here is the Christie administration's environment commissioner, Bob Martin, on this show recently on the cap-and-trade system, and he will refer to it here as Reggie, and he called it ineffective.
The bottom line is that we are going down, and it's got nothing to do with the Reggie program. The cap right now is set so high, there is no incentive for generators to move to other fuels or otherwise. They're moving already to other fuels automatically because from the state of New Jersey, we've been pushing them for environmental reasons overall, not just greenhouse gases. And like any other states along the coast that were part of Reggie, we're shifting big time to offshore wind and solar.
So, Governor Whitman, as somebody who was and is supportive of the northeastern states' Reggie cap-and-trade system, do you take his criticism Or do you think that they're, you know, that they're spinning this?
No, I have to take his criticism at face value. I haven't spent enough time behind the numbers to know whether what he's saying is true or not. I am a supporter of cap and trade overall because I think it works. But given today's economic situation of the pressures on states, as long as we're moving forward in reducing our greenhouse gas emissions more than just because the economy slowed down, I'm with you on that. I don't want to see that. That can't be the out. We've got to be more proactive than that. But there are a lot of different ways of reaching these goals. And one of them is adopting clean energy. That's one of the things that is very important. If you've seen that the most recent polls, the public now is getting a little less concerned about climate change, but they're very supportive of clean energy. And that's, again, where we talk about nuclear coming in as part of that. Again, not a silver bullet, not the only answer, part of a much bigger, more comprehensive energy plan that we better get out of Congress someday. They're advocating their responsibility there, I feel, but we need to move it forward.
Politically, on cap and trade, do you think maybe the governor is trying to avoid a Mitt Romney problem if he ever runs for president? You know, like Romney had his Obama-style health reform in Massachusetts. Maybe Christie doesn't want anybody saying, how can we believe you about opposing cap and trade nationally if you have it in your state? Does that theory make sense?
No, I don't think Chris Christie is making any of these decisions based on a potential run for the presidency. I think he is, from what I have seen of what he is doing it in the best interest of the state of New Jersey, trying to get us on a track that is sustainable for the future. And that's why I say, well, I can agree or disagree on the actual Reggie part, but I haven't gotten enough behind the numbers to see what they were concerned about. The fact that he has said we need to do something about climate change, and, oh, by the way, humans are having an impact here, I think is very good news.
Are you a supporter of cap and trade as federal policy?
I have been because it worked so well in the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990 with the SO2. I recognize that carbon is a different animal, and it's more difficult to apply a cap and trade system to greenhouse gases. But I think it can be done with the right formula. I do it industry by industry, put it out far enough, and give the industries time to reach the goals. But have those standards set at a place that it's going to make a difference.
What do you make of it becoming such a pariah in the Republican Party? It used to have more mainstream support. John McCain ran on it in his presidential bid in 2008, but now we see Tim Pawlenty, former governor of Minnesota, who supported it as governor, walking away from it, and other Republicans definitely not touching it.
It has become a third rail, and I find that disappointing that climate change has become a third rail. But again, I've gotten to the point where if we're making progress, I don't care what we call it, and if we're going to do it because we're adopting clean energy, and that by definition will reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, let's do it.
I guess cap and trade would also be in the interest of the nuclear power industry, because if it becomes more expensive to emit carbon, then, you know, the balance of what's cost effective between different power sources might tilt a little more toward nuclear, yes?
Well, it would tilt toward all the green powers, all the other forms of green power. Any form of green power would benefit, obviously, from a cap or a tax. But I don't see either of those things happening, frankly. I don't see an appetite in Congress. There's certainly, as you've been pointing out, not much appetite in many of the states. So that, again, you're going to have to come at it from a different perspective, and that would be clean and green energy, because if we can reduce the amount of pollutants we put in the air, we're going to help people's health. We're going to help our overall quality of life. And nuclear is a part of that, but it's only one part of it.
And environmentalists would say, yeah, nuclear is green energy in the carbon sense, but we've still got at least this huge problem of spent fuel pools and spent fuel rods that nobody in America has yet figured out what to do with it.
Well, they know what to do with it. It's a political thing that they've not done anything with it. It's not a scientific issue. It's a political issue. I mean, Congress said it's not optimum to have them stored at the 104 reactors we have around the country. They are safely stored, the spent rods. Again, if you took them all and put them in one place, you'd fill up one football field to the height of the goalpost. So it's not a massive, massive amount you're talking about. But if you look around the world, France and other countries have done a lot of reprocessing that reduces how much you have to store. down to a very much smaller amount. It's an issue with which we've got to deal. And again, the Congress has got to step up to this. They're the ones who said, we need a national repository, we need one repository, and oh, by the way, it should be Yucca Mountain in Nevada. What's stopping that has nothing to do with science. It has everything to do with politics. And whether they decide on Yucca Mountain or two places or three around the country, they need to decide. But that's Congress.
Former Governor and EPA Administrator Christy Whitman for just another few minutes. On another issue, whenever we have you on, no matter what topic we are talking about, we get callers who want to ask you this. And with the 10th anniversary of 9/11, 2001 coming up, I'm going to ask it. And many people consider part of the legacy of 9/11 to be you as EPA Administrator declaring the downtown air, quote, safe to breathe on September 18th. Subsequently, depending on which figures you cite, an estimated 70% of Ground Zero workers, thousands of people have had respiratory problems. We just got this DROGA Act passed to cover health costs for more of them. Any regrets?
How can I regret reporting what was said, what the science was telling us? And again, there were two different messages that needed to get out. One, that the workers on the pile needed to wear respirators. We said that and reinforced that every day at EPA. And what I said was always a bifurcated message. It was ambient air quality in lower Manhattan in general was safe to breathe. On the pile, they needed respirators. I've said that from the beginning. The agency has said it. And it was based on scientific readings that they were getting, not just from our own readers, but from information that was coming from the city, from the state, and from hospitals and surrounding areas. So the best you can do is not try to impose any kind, in this situation, any kind of a political or personal judgment, and go with what the facts are telling you, what the scientists are telling you. And again, the problem was in being able to enforce, not being able to enforce, that those working on the pile wore respirators. I absolutely believe that we're seeing health impacts on those workers because they were on that pile day in and day out breathing really nasty stuff. But that's different than what we're seeing, what we were seeing, and the readings we were getting in lower Manhattan. And I tried to deliver that message. If it wasn't delivered in a way that people understood, that's a problem, but that was the message, and it was based on the facts that I was getting.
Was there a political or even economic or social agenda there, in part, to get the city back to work downtown as quickly as possible if you thought those readings were safe, but maybe hustling it up a little bit?
No, not on our part. I can't speak for the city. I can't speak for anybody else. The one time that I got any pressure at all was right after 9/11, where there was some pressure put on to open Wall Street before we'd had a chance to clean the buildings. I refused to do that. I said we had to make sure that those buildings had been cleaned before you let anybody back in, and everybody backed off, and that's what happened.
Do you think that some government officials, and I don't remember if you were there at the time, but by going to the site and not wearing respirators, maybe they wanted to look macho or I don't know what, sent the wrong signal that helped contribute to worker deaths and illnesses later?
Any time you were on that site, I was at that site a couple of times, and I always had a mask. I wasn't there long enough to require a full respirator, but I always wore a mask, and I can remember getting after some of the reporters that were there and said, would you please put on masks or have them there? You're here full-time. You need to have them. Anytime you're seen down there without, for whatever reason, it did reinforce that confusion of the message of should you wear it or shouldn't you wear it, and gave people an opportunity to say, these things are heavy, the real respirators, they're heavy, they're cumbersome, they clog, they're hot, because if you remember, that was a warm September, October, but they didn't, for whatever reason, didn't wear them, and that's unfortunate.
Last thing, are you still active in the Republican Leadership Council, which we've talked about before, that promotes fiscally conservative, socially inclusive candidates? Is that still an active group?
That's still an active group, and we're working on expanding it and trying to bring in all the other groups that are out there that feel the same way, of which there are a number of Republican organizations, whether it's Republicans for Environmental Protection or any of the others, to come together to pool our resources and focus our strategies to ensure that there's an opportunity for like-minded candidates who support those ideals to be heard and be able to be elected to office to make a difference.
Are you, is that group pro-gay marriage at this point?
Excuse me?
Are you or is the group pro-gay marriage at this point?
We don't take positions on something like that. I've said that, frankly, I think the state ought to be out of the marriage business entirely. That for heterosexual or homosexual couples, what we ought to do, the state part of it, is the licensing, the initial licensings. Once you've done that, you take out marriage is a religious thing. If you have a church or a synagogue or a mosque that wants to marry a gay couple, so be it. That's fine. But that's the religion part of it, and I think you ought to separate church and state.
And any presidential hopefuls that you're especially interested in from that starting point of fiscally conservative, socially inclusive?
Well, I want to take a good hard look at John Huntsman. I know him. I've seen him. I've seen him in action in China. I like the idea of someone who's been in the private sector, the public sector as an executive, and has international experience. And if you're going to have that, it isn't all bad to know about China, because we're going to have to be dealing with it.
All right, and we're going to play a clip of Huntsman coming up later this hour as we talk about his sort of farewell address as China ambassador, where he talked some tough talk on human rights and the news today that they may have released in China the dissident Ai Weiwei. Thanks for coming on. As always, Governor Christine Todd Whitman, former governor of New Jersey, former EPA administrator, co-chair of Case Energy and Whitman Strategy Group. Thank you very, very much.
Good to talk to you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, the AARP endorses cuts in Social Security. You've heard that headline? Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. And then we will do that China segment. Stay with us.